Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Finances. We've had many a feature on financial literacy, or indeed financial illiteracy, on the program in times past. And indeed, insecurity about money often stems from past experiences and how you grew up. Not my words, but the words of our guest today in the Author of the Week feature, of course, Kaylee Boisvert. How are you, Kaylee?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, and fascinated by this fantastic series of texts that you've put together in terms of how to cope with finances. Specifically, we're talking about Make Money Your Thing, an approachable guide to take women on a journey from avoidance and overwhelm to feeling comfortable and in control of their finances. And it's also fair to say, Kaylee, that not only are you talking the talk, but you've also walked the walk yourself on this side of things.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So my new book, Make Money Your Thing, it's out now. And you're right, a bit about my background. So I was raised by a single mom, and I was very fascinated from an early age about money because we didn't have a lot growing up. So fast forward to like career-wise, I landed in the finance industry. I went on mat leave to have my baby, and coming back, I was a single mom. And that's when I knew, like, I had to really dive into that purpose and that why of supporting women with their finances, because I was a financially independent woman doing that myself. I was raised by a mom who I experienced go through that as well. So I wanted women to know, like, you know, there is some really tough times. Like, I'm going to acknowledge it's quite tough as a single earner in general. And then when you have children as well, that you're, you know, those added expenses. So I really wanted to just step into that to know, you know, women, you're not alone. I'm, you know, here with you. And what can I share? What can I really teach women that will help them feel just a little bit better, give them a little bit of a confidence boost so they feel empowered to go take the steps that they need to take for their money?
Later on in this hour, we'll be speaking to Will Meller, who is an actor who's got a couple of young children, and is also talking about financial education, financial literacy. I mean, does it start at a young age that actually there is this notion that unless you're careful, children will tend to say, well, money's just like magic. You just wave a little wand or wave a little card and whoosh, there it is.
Yes, exactly. You're right. It does start really early on. And I wrote another book because of that. It's coming out September 19th. It's called Money Wise Mabel's Bursting Bank, and it's for children. And that's really the goal with that one as well. You're right. Like these early conversations with money, we can have them with our children to instill positive money mindset, positive beliefs around money. Because, you know, on the flip side of that, if we're talking really negatively and they're hearing those things, they're taking that on as well. Like, we have to remember our kids are always listening to what we're saying. So if you're saying like, oh, I can never get ahead and everything's so expensive and, you know, money's so hard to deal with and I don't understand it, well, they're picking up on that. So let's be careful about what we're saying around our children and start them off on a good foot by talking positively about money and hearing, you know, about their big goals and dreams. And so my book, Money Wise Mabel's Bursting Bank, is just that, to have a conversation with your kids about, you know, what are you saving your money for, and hear their big money dreams, because kids, it's so fun. They're all about the possibilities. And so getting into that mindset when we're talking about money, it's so much more uplifting and positive. And then, you know, I believe from that, more of that will come your way.
I love the phrase, get ready to shift from money fear and avoidance, which is so vital when we're thinking about the way in which we can often be almost paralyzed by the fear of that. And again, shift to confidence and ease. Let's bring on board one of our younger contributors, of course, and indeed an ace writer to be, who's just completing her dissertation for her master's children's literature back in North Carolina, of course, now, Jessica Burtis. Jessica, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Kaylee?
Hello. Yeah, I think I have a lot of questions. I think anytime the subject is money, I think people often have a lot of like different thoughts, questions about it. But I was actually curious about how you personally got involved in finance and money.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it was just early on, like that fascination or trying to understand it more. Because growing up, and when you don't have a lot of money, and the phrases my mom would always use is like, "No, we don't have enough. We can't afford that." But I looked around and I would see that, well, that's not the case for everyone. Like my friends had the stuff that I wanted, and so it was, to me, it was like something I wanted to figure out. Like it felt like a problem that if I could figure it out, I could solve it essentially. So I must have like a very analytical brain by nature, but wanting to learn more because I figured if I could learn more, I could do things differently, or I could do things in my power to make a difference. So I think just early on, those experiences for me of, us not having a lot of money had led to my journey of, I want to know more, I want to do more. And then with what I learn, I want to teach other people and I want to share that knowledge.
And how did you get into writing, and how was that process of making a book?
Yeah, that was a scary process. So scary. So again, a very like analytical brain, but in my past, I've been very creative as well. So I was sitting at my desk one day and I said out loud, I want to start writing stuff. And there was a guy that overheard me in my office and he said, well, I was just at this networking event and I met this book coach. Maybe you should get in touch. So I was like, what's a book coach? So I got in touch with her and I shared that with her as well. Just, I want to do all these things, these writing projects, but I have no idea what to do or where to start. And that was like the catalyst that got me going. Like a book coach is just, it's almost like a life coach or a business coach. Like it's that person in your corner holding you accountable, there for support, motivation all along the way. So I highly like attribute to, I wouldn't have gotten to where I am without her. She was like that person on days where I'm like, no, I can't do this. This doesn't, I don't know how. Like this is way over my abilities. And she would just keep me on course and say, nope, like you got this, and help kind of talk me through those moments. So it's like helping you get through almost like the inner stuff that comes up that's almost holding you back. And it's that like friction when you're writing. Because like, I think the stat is the reason there's so many people that want to write a book and they have this great book inside of them. I believe everyone does. But the number one thing is that no one finishes their book. Like that's the biggest thing. And so I'm like, well, that's the key, a book coach, because they're just going to stand beside you and make you, like get you to keep going to the finish line instead of giving up and not finishing. Because I'm going to like be absolutely honest, it's not an easy process. There's a lot of, you go through your starting version and what it becomes, and it seems it's like two whole different things. But again, it's kind of fun. Like it's almost like this like evolution and progression, and that you feel so much growth in yourself. For me, it was like actually finding my voice from doing it. And I got so much better at being able to vocalize what I wanted to do and why I wanted to help women in my business. And that became like so much clearer from writing the book. So I think like writing is such an amazing process. There's like highs and lows for sure. But if it's something that someone's considering, like I think it's absolutely worth it.
The essence of well-being seems to be very much to the at the heart of your work, Kaylee. Is that something which you consciously look to work through? Is it something which you've wanted to make user-friendly? Because sometimes you look at some financial literacy and it seems it's you just don't know where to start, because they start talking about three-letter acronyms, APRs, interest rate, all the rest of the bits and pieces, and suddenly you just think, just stop, just go away.
Yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, you're like, that's kind of boring too. Like, if it's not your jam, like, I love reading money books and stuff, but I realize not everyone likes that. So I think we have to be realistic and like give it to people easily and digestible and remind them, hey, you don't need to know everything and you don't have to be the expert. Like, and you'll never be the expert because it's constantly changing. And I'm assuming most people have their own full-time jobs and busy lives. So like, think about how can you incorporate money and your finances into your life in a way where it's easy and repeatable. Like, let's be honest with ourselves that, as a single mom, I can tell you I have very little time to spare most of the time with all the other things I have on the go. So don't be hard on yourself and think like, I need to learn everything. I need to learn all the acronyms, figure it out, and then I can invest and then I can succeed. That's not the case at all. It's more so you have to get that inner confidence boost of, hey, I don't know this. I'm kind of learning on the go, but it's okay for me to dive in because this is important for my money. I have to take action. Taking action for your money is the biggest step. So yes, you won't know everything and you might not even know it down the line perfectly or anything like that, but it's all about just stepping up, taking the actions, doing what's realistic for you. So don't ever feel overwhelmed thinking, I need to learn this all. I need to figure it out before I can do it all, because then you're never going to do it. So it's kind of that diving in, because perfection, it's not a part of it at all. And it's never going to be. Like, money's a part of your everyday life. You're going to make money decisions every day. So you just got to jump in and say, I got to try to make more good ones, positive ones than, you know, not so good. But some of those other bad money decisions, or what you might think of as like a money mistake, or things you regret, those will happen. Those will come up. That's okay. Still, you just got to move on and move forward.
We hear a great deal of talk these days about the cashless society. And this certainly emerged with respect to the pandemic that we all went through, in which actually the very notion of actually having tangible coins or notes that you'd actually exchange for other things was regarded as very much a non-starter. However, there are still an awful lot of society who are disadvantaged because they don't have a card. They don't have an app that they can use on their mobile phone. They might be confused by the apps of which there are millions of which you can actually use and download. They might not even know how to download an app. Do you feel that in the 21st century, possibly more than any time since we shifted from bartering to actually cash transactions in the first place, we do have this confusion whereby how we actually handle money, and indeed how it doesn't handle us, and the notion that, as I said at the start, you just wave a card or a piece of plastic, or you wave your wrist and your phone, etc., and that debits things, that transaction is really difficult to get one's head around.
You're right. Yeah. Because it's like you're separating yourself from that, because it's like, I'll pay later. I don't have to worry about now. I'll think about it at another time. And that future you that has to pay for it is still you, but it's like a separation in our mind of, I don't have to worry about that right now. So it's gotten a little scary, and there's more and more options out there. Like, don't pay for this many days, or pay it across, you know, this much time. And it's unfortunately, I think, really working against us in the realm of money. And so the technology, as good as technology is and how much it supports us, I think with money, sometimes you have to get back to the basics. Like, I yesterday spent some time, and I suggest this for everyone, just spend more time on your money, because I don't think we give enough money time back to our money. We spend a lot of time earning it. We don't give much time back. But I took out a piece of paper and I was writing down my monthly expenses from the previous month, because I was like, pen to paper, I got to see it added up, and it felt really good afterwards. And so that's very like old school method. I didn't have an app doing it. I got to take some time, figure it out, and then look at the numbers and then decide there were certain things I was paying for that I don't even use. So I went through and canceled it. And I'm like, wow, I'm saving like $200 a month now from all the things that I changed and did. And again, it was like, probably took me 30 minutes max to do all that, saving $200 a month. Think about how much that can add up. And it was just a piece of paper and a pen and a calculator. So like those tools, if you have them, it's sometimes nice to just go back to those basics, because it can get very confusing, convoluted. And so it's sometimes nice to just really put it down, see where the numbers are coming from, what they are, and then decide if that's where you want to continue moving forward of your conscious, like choosing, is there anything you want to change? So we have gotten to a point where it is really scary. It is really easy to spend money. You could spend money all day long, you know, from the comfort of your home with your online shopping, and, you know, how easily and accessible things like Amazon and whatnot are. So the forces that are working against us are really strong. And I think we need to acknowledge that and know it's just more of like a conscious thought process we have, almost like a pause. I think that's probably my biggest piece of advice for people. If you're finding that, you know, the spending is going up or out of control for you, can you create a pause there before you push that buy button or before you make that buying decision, where you pause, you know, walk away even for a few minutes and then decide? Because there has to be a science to our brain too. And that, again, instant gratification, click, I'll pay for it later. You know, nothing's been, no worries, I didn't spend anything. But you did spend something, and future you has to deal with it. So have a pause, like create a pause for yourself.
Hayley, you speak much sense. And I know from my experience, my own late mother, she used to be a head cashier, and she also had her financial head screwed on when it came to finance, etc. So I'm left to wonder, why is it that when we look around the world, and we have this in Britain as well, we have female prime ministers, we rarely have women in charge of countries' exchequers? We have, obviously, in Britain, we've had a series of male chancellors of the exchequer, people who actually control the purse strings, who effectively set the budgets and so on and so forth. Is it because, you know, it's a masculine thing? It's a last bastion. Why aren't there more women like yourself, Kaylee, taking over country finances? I mean, I'm sure that even in the States, United States, Canada, etc., you know, some of the decisions that were made, let's go back to 2007, 2008, subprime mortgages, huge impact. We're still recovering from it in many ways. I doubt whether that would have happened if you actually had women in charge of the system. So what's happening, Kaylee?
I like that, but maybe it wouldn't have happened with women. I believe the same thing, but it's hard to get other people on that with me. You're right. Like, I think it's very heavily our patriarchal past, because I used to have a podcast, and there was a woman that like studied like ancient civilizations, and like way, 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 way back, there were certain ones that had women as like in charge, but she said it was often even more of just like a figurehead role. And ultimately, they weren't the ones in control of the wealth, of the money and things like that. So when we're thinking about like the patriarchy and men being more in control of finances, it goes back probably almost like our entire history of that we know of. So that, I think, is why, is like we're playing catch up on the past. And things are changing, but it's slow to change because, I mean, this has happened for so long. If you look back in time, even from where we are today, women didn't even have access to credit cards or the ability to own property until like the 1960s or 70s. So this is very new, women getting to be able to make decisions. But we have to quickly catch up, like with everything. You know, times are changing. It's not the same now. Women are making just as much money, more money. They're in charge of the household finances. In single households like myself, you know, I am in charge of the finances. So we do have the ability to contribute. We can help make good decisions. Women are really good with money. Like, if I can sum it all up for you, I work with the majority of my clients are women, and I can tell you they're great with money. It's more of like an inner dialogue that they have to get over, telling themselves, I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good at math. I'm not good with money. Those like self-defeating statements, it's almost like you're writing yourself off before you even give yourself a chance. So I think women are actually great with money. They're very level-headed when it comes to investing as well, and long-term planning for their goals. So I think the work needs to be done for us women. It's some inner work to give ourselves that confidence, give ourselves permission to say, I'm a serious earner. I'm a smart investor. I know what I'm talking about. I have value to contribute to money conversations. You know, I've got this, I can do this. So money is my thing. And that's what I hope women are saying at the end of reading my book, is money is my thing.
There is, of course, a counter argument which says that the fault of capitalism is that basically it's responsible for all of the major challenges that we're faced with. But that's another issue. And ideologically, it's beyond the scope of this interview. Jessica, let's turn to yourself. Finances, in terms of obviously you've had to look after yourself in Ireland and in England and so on, and obviously now back in North Carolina. Any thoughts from the discussion so far?
I'd be really curious about, like Alex was saying, when I left and kind of lived on my own, I was pretty young, so I was curious about how you approach, if you do see it differently, where finances between somebody who's established with a career going versus somebody who maybe is younger and kind of first getting into their first bits of independence away from home and having to worry about their own finances.
Yeah, that's a great conversation and topic because, and again, we don't learn a lot of this early on. So it can be quite scary, like when you jump in. I remember phoning my mom when I was like completely financially independent. It was after I was finished university. And I was like, life is so expensive because there was things she was still helping me with along the way. And then I'm living on my own and you're paying for everything. So I think for young people, yes, acknowledge you're probably not in your highest earning years. So it's probably going to continue to increase. And in future years, you can probably do things like save a bit more, buy that house, things like that. But there's still things you can do. And I would say habits that you can get started on that are so important leading into those higher earning years. So for young people, this is so important because you're establishing the foundation, you're establishing the habits that are going to set you up for financial success in the future. So, just like I would have a conversation with someone talking about retirement planning and things like that, for young people, it might seem so far off, that idea of retirement, financial independence, but still, can you set up like an automatic contribution or deposit into a retirement savings account for yourself? And again, it might be like $25 or $20 a month. Doesn't matter. It's the whole habit that you're getting into, because then later on, as your earnings go up, you go, okay, I'm going to increase that slightly. I make 10% more. I will up that by 10% every month. So it's still having the habit to do the things, like getting in the habit of remembering to, save up and have money before you make big expenses. So if it's a travel you want to do, if it's a big move coming up, do some time planning out, okay, how much do I think that might cost? How am I going to get there for savings? Instead of deciding, I'll just put that on my credit card, I'll get a loan or something like that, pay it later. Because that's the biggest mistake you can make as a young person too, is like putting yourself deep into debt, because it's going to take years to get out of that. And interest is compounding, working against you in that case. So even if you can say, I'm making sure I'm not going to go into debt and things like that, you're setting yourself up well for the future, because just not having debt is like a big challenge for some people. Like a lot of people are couldn't even can't even make the afford to make their debt payments based on, what they've spent money on and things like that. So there's just little things you can do, and it does make a big difference. Think of it as like, this is the time to build the good habits that you want to keep going forward.
And out of curiosity, I know I've seen a lot of like financial coaches or people kind of giving financial advice on like TikTok and things like that. So do you have an opinion on that? And like kind of how social media like Instagram and TikTok has kind of been changing like how people talk about finance?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say, just like with anything you're hearing, still take it with like critical thought and decide, I like that belief or that practice that this person is sharing. That makes sense to me. That resonates with me. That one doesn't. So you still have to be discerning of like which you're going to sort of go with, and that's probably, you have to kind of feel it out and decide for you personally, because there's a whole community talking about young people really aggressively saving so they can have financial independence early on. But that whole how to make that fire, it's called like financial independence, retire early, how to make that happen is you have to really cut down on expenses. You have to like live on quite a limited budget, and that's not realistic for everyone. So I want people to acknowledge, embrace your own uniqueness. So first, kind of establish what it is you want. What are you trying to achieve? And stay true to that. And then listen, because of course they're giving great tips and ideas, and that's going to serve you well. But go back to, okay, but this is what I want to do. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. Because when we get caught up in that, you might be thinking, okay, I need to have a house by this age, and I have to make sure that this much is money is going to here every month and this to there. And if you don't feel like you're fitting in, it's not gonna feel right for you. Like, we have to acknowledge that life, it's about like living your own life and your joy and finding that for yourself. And it's different for everyone. So it's hard to give blanketed financial advice because we don't know the audience we're talking to and what stage of life they're in and what they're trying to accomplish. So when I'm actually working with clients, it's sitting down and having like a discovery conversation of what are you trying to achieve? Where are you now? Where are you going? And then designing it that way. So when we're kind of throwing it out there, we have to acknowledge it's going to be different for everyone. And I hope they're acknowledging that when they're giving that advice. But by all means, I'm pro financial literacy for sure. And these platforms are giving an opportunity for people to have these important conversations.
Would you view banks as being the heroes, the villains, or neither in this whole debate? Because, you know, oftentimes, certainly in Britain, we've recently had the whole notion of cancel culture with banks making apparently arbitrary decisions on closing accounts of clients whose views they don't agree with. And they just close the accounts just like that, which tends to suggest potentially a very dangerous precedent. Because if you happen to have a bank manager whom you will probably never, ever know, because the days of actually speaking to the bank manager on one-on-one have long since gone, so you're dealing with corporations. Is that something which has become much more problematic, whereby we see these monolithic organizations and, you know, the whether you're talking about Morgan Stanley, Chase International, whether we're talking NatWest, HSBC, any of the big areas out there that are obviously doing extremely well profit-wise, etc. And yet the little guy at the end or gal can be really problematized by what they see as a big challenge, just getting an account.
Yeah, that's a big issue, and you're right. And it has become very corporation and profit driven, which is unfortunate. I think like we always have to go back to they are in existence because of people who trust their money and their finances to it. So I think we always have to go back to the perspective of what do our clients need? What do they want? How do we make this better for them? Because I only exist because clients work with me and trust me to help them with their finances and planning for their goals and things like that. I would not be in this position without them. So I think the banks need to have that reality check too of we only exist because of them. So we need to be listening to them and putting their needs before our own.
Artificial intelligence is another big concept that seems to be emerging on a week by week basis. And clearly we're having a discussion now. We're not ChatGPT created, at least as far as I'm aware, neither of us are, and Jessica certainly isn't. So we're working on that premise. Do you feel as though that automation, that one step removed from the human conversation is much more problematic? Not just for creatives, people who we feature regularly on Author of the Week, where in essence we'd say we'll get an accountant, etc., but actually folk who in essence literally are challenged technologically by the fact they don't want to actually speak to a chatbot, because a chatbot probably doesn't understand their, as you said earlier, phase of life that they're going through.
Yeah, I think we're so quick to jump to those. And it's like in some ways kind of silly. Like I love technology, of course, and how it's made things so easy. Like I talked to my daughter about how when I was her age, you know, we didn't have like Netflix where you can watch things like on demand of your choosing. I'm like, you watch what's on TV and you watch the commercials, like, and that's it. You don't get to choose what you're watching. And so it's like so much different and so much better in so many ways. But I think we're so quick to jump to those solutions and just like cut out the people, you know, we don't need them. And it's gotten kind of challenging because I have called certain things. Like I remember I called the bank recently. I'm like, okay, I just need to talk to a person because I have to actually open this business account, go in, like move this money here and da da da. So I called to like, okay, I'll make an appointment. And it was just like a chat, like robot thing. And it wouldn't let me even just make an appointment or do anything. And it said, go online. And I go online. I'm like, I don't know where to go online. So it's like they jump to it and it's not that user friendly, because I'm of the generation where we like learned it as we were growing up. So I feel like I'm of the we can figure it out, you know, click here and do this. And I can't figure it out at all. So I think we're a little too quick to jump to it fully without giving people the proper instruction or time or acknowledging that sometimes your situation, it doesn't fit in that computer box of like, just go here, just go there. And it's so frustrating. Like, I'm just like, ah.
And again, I have to say, I think fairly recently, 44 minutes I was waiting to get through to a human being on our bank thing. And frankly, one's got other things that one needs to be getting on with to actually sort of work through the process rather than actually simply wait for another side of things. Jessica, you could obviously tell it's a thing I actually have with respect to banks at this stage, but and obviously we need more Kayleys and fewer sort of monolithic banking scenarios. Any further questions you'd like to put into the mix?
I would say for someone who's wanting to start out learning about financial literacy and reading your books, where should they start?
That's great. Yeah. So think of it as just like an ongoing journey. And again, do what's going to work well with your existing, you know, scheduling and things like that. So if you're like, I probably only have about 10 minutes to spare a day on learning that, then that's great. Then maybe it's signing up for like a newsletter from a, you know, financial coach that you trust, or I send a newsletter to my clients once a week, and it has like 6 different articles. And I say to them, just read one article a week. Like that's going to make a difference, because the first few times you might, you know, it might kind of go over your head or you're not really getting it. But then as you continue that, and again, that's like a 10 minute per week commitment, all of a sudden you'll say like, oh, I remember hearing that or seeing that. And you'll start to almost like have that foundation building. So I would say just take it slow, do what's realistic. If it is like read my book, like Make Money Your Thing, it's a great book to read. And I try to make it very like digestible, an easy read, so you don't feel like overwhelmed that you have to be like taking notes or something like that, like it's a textbook. So, you know, find those sources and take it in those bite-sized pieces. Don't overwhelm yourself all at once. Listen to a podcast, listen to, yeah, like a 20 minute show about a topic that you're wanting to learn on. Like podcasts, you can search all sorts of topics that are probably going to be existing in some way on that platform to help you learn more. So I would say that just have it as something realistically that you can incorporate into your life that isn't going to like be something then that you stress or dread or something like that. Another good thing is just schedule some time that you can devote to giving back to your money, and that's going to make a big difference. So if you can say, you know, on one Sunday per month, I'm going to spend 30 minutes just looking over expenses, spending some time looking at where my money is going, how much is coming in, you know, how much I'm spending, what are some of my goals? Like there's all sorts of things you can cover in that time, but schedule it, put it in, and then make sure that you're accountable and you show up and you do that. So those are things, and there, I again, find what's very realistic, but anything is better than nothing. So just little changes that are realistic in your everyday life.
KayleeBoisvert.com. That's KayleeBoisvert.com. Or indeed follow at KayleeBoisvert. Again, KayleeBoisvert. Are they the best ways of actually finding you online, Kaylee?
Yeah, those are. Thank you for sharing.
And of course, you're based in Calgary, Alberta. So ever sort of had any thoughts about moving elsewhere? Or is it a case of no? I'm going to be basing my Canadian empire here.
No, I love to. I want to do more traveling. So my youngest is 1 right now. So me and my daughter are like, I think we have to wait a little bit longer. She's 9 and we're ready to go, but he's like crazy, so we can't take him anywhere. But I love traveling. I love seeing different places. So Canada's amazing, though. I can't really say anything negative about Canada, but I love seeing the world and going new places.
Excellent. Well, Make Money Your Thing is your latest book that's actually out there. And a little plug for the children's book that's coming up in a few months' time. That is called
Moneywise Mabel's Bursting Bank.
There we are, double whammy. And we've got 2 final questions to actually wrap up with, which I know Jessica will deliver with her usual effortless style and aplomb. Over to you, Jessica.
Yes. Kaylee, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with today?
Oh, sorry, you cut out. Can you start again?
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer?
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today? Obviously, that build-up, it's created problems with respect to the electronic challenges there. So have you enjoyed the last half hour or so, Kaylee?
I have. I love this. Thank you.
Well, and the next critical question is, can we look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you come back?
Of course. Of course.
Kaylee Boisvert, financial expert extraordinaire. Huge thanks. And up next, there's a double whammy, another author of the week. That's Jenny Finch with another tale from Tipperary. And we've also got, as mentioned, Will Mellor with his talk about young people's finances. Bernardo, Kaylee Brava, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you.
Well, we've had the author of the week, and now it's time to move to another author, an author of a century in many ways, with another classic Tipperary tale. It's Jenny Finch in her time machine, taking us back, I believe, to 2022.
That's right, Alex. Hello, this episode is from July 2022. Those of you who have followed this adventure from the start will know the move, over 18 months ago, was close to being a disaster. This is especially true for my side of it, as the decisions I had to make and the sheer volume of stuff I had overwhelmed me. I ended up taking four of the largest boxes, cramming them full, and writing TBS on the side. To be sorted. Well, some has been, but a lot hasn't. Instead, it is stacked in the back room, the guest room. And now I have to face it all and sort, recycle, gift, and abandon all over again. As I began to pick through the crates, I found myself muttering, "What the heck was I thinking?" I am making progress, albeit slowly, and Jackie has performed a minor miracle on the bed. We had two nice pine beds with us for spare rooms. One of them arrived with no mattress and is broken. The other has lost all its fixings. The second bed the idiot movers did this to. Somehow, Jackie managed to adapt the metal bolts from one to build the other, adding corner braces for extra support. It is now up, very strong, and ready to welcome our first guest next month. I was wondering if we needed to buy a new one. Ha! What the heck was I thinking? This last week has been very busy, as Jackie has been ill, not COVID. I drove the car down to town for its annual service. This is no big deal for some people, but it was a familiar journey taken in reverse. As a dyspraxic, I can rarely remember the way anywhere, unlike Jackie, who can navigate by the sun like a homing pigeon. I rely on a spoken, chanted series of visual clues. Down the bumpy road and stop, then left round the bend by the Swiss-style house. Slow, slow, mad tractors around, slide past the pink cottage and look for the swans. Taking the road in reverse meant my roadmap was useless and most of the landmarks invisible until I was past them. But I did it, and I'm inordinately proud of myself. The next day, we headed off to Ross Cray, to the dentist. I have had two very loose teeth at the back for more than 3 years due to COVID restrictions. My appointment to have them removed in England was cancelled. So were the next two appointments. I developed an abscess the day before the actual move, and the dentist was eager to pull them then, late in the afternoon. That was hopeless. I couldn't have done anything for the move or been able to think the next day. So I took some antibiotics and left. Ireland has a shortage of dentists, and I've been trying to join the practice of choice for 18 months. When we arrived, we were locked down. Then they closed for all but existing patients, and then they moved. Finally, I broke a tooth last week, and they offered me an appointment. I am needle phobic and have had a lot of problems with my teeth, so I was shaking when I got there. Now, I have had very gentle dentists before. I have had very skillful dentists before. This is the first time I've had one who is both. I was expecting her to remove the broken tooth, but instead she suggested the two at the top were more urgent. Somehow I found myself agreeing. What the heck was I thinking? I wondered as the top injections loomed. Jackie was really startled when I appeared and told her, but it was as painless as two extractions can be. One tooth had been waking me up most nights as it slithered out of place, which is very disturbing. It was so loose, the dentist reached in, tapped it, and it fell out in her hand. She held it out, laughed, and said, "I don't think I can charge you for this one." And she didn't. Later that week, a big parcel arrived from IKEA. I'd been using a hanging rail for my clothes since we moved, and we decided it was time to tidy up the room. How hard could it be? I opened the instruction book and was faced with pages of obscure line drawings. What the heck? Well, it took several days, a plethora of tools, and some creative swearing, but we managed it. The hardest part was lifting it up from the floor and manoeuvring it into position. They're heavy things, wardrobes. And fitting the sliding doors, of course, they are beasts. Just line up, slide them in, and wait for the click, said the booklet. Yeah, right. So there we are. We're still pushing on. The house is slowly getting tidier as we sort things and find proper places for them. Jackie has sorted many of the tools and put them away in the grooming room. She's also labelled everything so we know where to put them when we finish. Measuring things in one box, cutting things in another, and screwdrivers and Allen keys in lefty-loosey, righty-tighty. We may add another box for MLB. That's making life better. It works for us, and no one else needs to rummage in our toolboxes anyway. We are still fighting the weeds, but indoors are bringing some semblance of order from chaos. It's been a busy few weeks, and we've had a weekend off to revel in nostalgia. We sat watching the Tour de France roll over the border through parts of Switzerland we know very well. We have driven many of the roads they used and caught glimpses of familiar places we loved. A bittersweet pleasure, but a pleasure nonetheless. Now, I know we say it every week, but what a few days we have had. Despite our planning and clever sequencing, things never go smoothly. But we are lucky, very lucky, with our friends and workmen. Despite the weather and the constraints of equipment hire and labour, they really came through last week. We needed the ongoing work finished so we could have another energy inspection. This will hopefully raise the BER rating on the house following the solar installation and other improvements. The final push for the water system was relaying the pipes so we could get rid of the butt-ugly pump house. This has an added bonus in letting more light onto the solar panels, but made a straightforward demolition impossible. Fergus was, understandably, nervous about dropping debris onto the panels and instead opted for a drill and hammer job. This was a lot of work, but had several benefits. Firstly, scarcely a speck of dust landed on the solar array. Secondly, a lot of the blocks were salvageable. Fergus bulldozed a ramp for us and lined it with some of the broken blocks. Jackie, who can visualise far better than I can, has plans to fill the gaps with compost and plant flowers, winter pansies, chrysanthemums, whatever she can, along the new wall. Next summer, we may plant honeysuckle along the back of the majestic too. The reusable blocks will make a decent footing for the polytunnel greenhouse. Very little goes to waste, something Fergus approves of heartily. It's one of the lovely Irish traditions we have encountered. Some of the delay was getting Fergus and the digger man at the same time as Tom the pump man. Having finally identified the water line, it made sense to have him dig it out in about 10 minutes. Tom and his lad said it would take them roughly half a day. Once he got access, though, Tom performed marvels, replacing the old pipes, running them through the wall of the Majestic, and joining it all up again with a minimum of disruption. It was very interesting watching the meeting between Tom and Fergus. With such a low population, everyone in Ireland tends to be related in some way. There is a verbal dance as both parties look to establish a connection. They begin with a surname and move out through occupations, places they've lived, and marriages. Finally, they land on an aunt who married the son of a distant great uncle, and the connection is made. As I have Irish ancestors, albeit from another county, somewhere back I'll be related to them both too. That is another lovely Irish tradition we've encountered. In the middle of this, another Tom, Fergus's assistant, was building a wood store and splitting logs out in the wood. And then Colin, the mower man, appeared. I know we say it every week, but I'm sure they come in groups hoping for safety in numbers. Colin soon got the mower running and gave it a quick service. It still needs a few parts, but he's waiting for these to be delivered. And in the meantime, we can actually cut the grass. We've been using the strimmer, but it's pitiful what I can manage, and the batteries run out too fast as it's rough land still and very overgrown. The mower is a bit clunky, the levers are very stiff, and we can't get the grass box on properly, so the cuttings went all over the lawn. But it's such fun. Now I want to try it on the wood. Early on in the week, we finally headed off to Limerick in search of the final bits we needed for the mopeds. Inconsequential things like crash helmets and tax disc holders. We settled on a place called Sprockets and Hubs in Adair. They advertised a specialist section of clothing for women, so it seemed a good bet. I have to say they were wonderful. The mopeds were much admired. Photos on the phone, it's a bit far for those little machines. And they were so helpful. We came back with everything we needed, including a couple of guardian bells. These are attached to the keys or the bike and promise a guardian angel to watch over the rider. Another lovely Irish tradition. I guess most of you don't follow the hurling, but last week was the All-Ireland Senior Final between Limerick and Kilkenny. Limerick won and the county was celebrating, none more so than in Adair, I suspect. There were flags everywhere, even on the churches. Some were huge, covering an entire bar with a space cut out for the door. You get a sense of how small the population is when you see a sign congratulating four local players from a place that small. We liked Adair very much, though it was extremely busy even on a Tuesday morning. We may go back to look around when the hurling hysteria is past and the tourist season ends. So we reached the end of another very busy fortnight. On Saturday evening, we always have a special meal cooked at home and eaten together in the kitchen diner. Sometimes we play music. Jackie has put together some splendid playlists and is terrific at finding new performers and new songs. Sometimes we sit and talk, happy to relax and enjoy one another's company. For us, it is our new and lovely Irish tradition. Take care and thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing, Jenny, another classic piece there, although I must admit I was a bit worried we were going down Marathon Man territory in the dentist section there, and you were going to say, is it safe on a regular basis? But never mind, you didn't, and you survived, so that's the important thing. Okay, for those people who wish to actually be totally up to date with your written forms, what should they go to? Where can they find you and locate you via the World Wide Web?
Right. All you have to do is to go to Google or the search engine of your choice and type in Jenny Finch, J-E-N-N-I-E Finch, all one word, .me.uk. And the whole lot will just pop up, including the most recent episode.
Okay, well, you may well adhere to the maxim that parents are very difficult to bring into the world, but either way, a recent survey from the wonderful Metro Bank has indicated that 43% of parents have actually borrowed money from their children, 5% not paying it back, and more than 4 in 4 parents would stop giving pocket money to their children because of financial concerns in the household. Now, we clearly need to address this, and we've got not one but two fabulous folk to actually do that. First of all, personal finance expert from Metro Bank, that's Mona Patel. How are you, Mona?
Good morning, Alex. I'm good, thanks.
Excellent. And we've also got that ace individual, actor extraordinaire, singer extraordinaire, model, Strictly Dancing So, and father to two. Sadly, it's not perfect because he is a Manchester United supporter. Will Mellor, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Straight in with the football.
I'm afraid so, but you know, at the end of the day, he did win one trophy last year, so that's not too bad. There was another side that won three, but what the heck? Let's talk a bit about this particular aspect, though, Will. I mean, I can't believe you ever actually deciding to cut off your children from pocket money. I mean, what were your thoughts about this findings? Was it is a case of, well, we're from Manchester, and obviously we need to actually be frugal as a result.
It's more about, I tell my kids about my upbringing, because my kids are very fortunate. You know, once they came along, I'd sort of been lucky enough to make a success in my career. So they didn't grow up the way I did on a working class council estate, where we didn't have much. My clothes came from a jumble sale, you know, but it was a great life because everything you got meant something. And if you got a pound at the end of your week washing your dad's car, I'd go and buy some stickers and put it in my football annual or swap them at school. It was a lot easier and there was a lot less pressure, I think, even though there was always pressure. Nowadays, it's really tough. And the way I've combated this situation is my daughter always comes to me. She's a teenager. She's always, I need this. I need this. No, dad, I need it now. And then she'd click on my phone and then something had arrived at the door the next day and I had to stop that. So I've opened in the bank account. She's got her own bank account, so has my son. And now if they earn money, it goes into that account and they can see it come out when they pay for something. So now it goes from do you want it or do you need it? And funny enough, she realizes she doesn't need it just as much as she did before because she's paying for it herself. And it's a vital, vital lesson that kids need to learn and young people need to learn is there's a cost to pressing this button because it's so easy now to have something ordered online and delivered. But if you don't see the transaction, it doesn't mean it's not happening. And kids need to understand that. You take the pressure off your parents because people are struggling at the moment with this cost of living crisis.
Mona, what Will's addressed there, very much the educational side of things. I mean, this is fairly critical. I mean, I remember the days when credit cards were developing from that point of view. We say, oh, it's just magic. It's just magical money, etc. But that is, it's important that people actually realize that. And are you seeing, Mona, an improvement in children becoming more savvy when it comes to actually both savings and indeed building up their finances?
I think children are probably becoming a bit more aware of the value of money. Financial education is hugely important. And one thing that we do at Metro Bank is something called Money Zone. And colleagues from our stores go into local schools, they go into their local communities, and they teach children about money. They get four lessons, they get taught about budgeting, they get taught about planning, they get taught about saving. From the age of nine, I think it's important that kids learn about money early. Because early habits make for lifelong habits, which they can then carry into adulthood. So our money zone has been delivered to sort of 250,000 kids across the country. And they love it. They love the fact that they can come into a Metro Bank store on the fourth lesson, they can go into the vault, they can talk to colleagues who work in the store, and just understand a little bit about how a bank works. And going to Will's point, if it's your money, you'll be much more careful with it. And so I think those early life lessons will definitely carry through into adulthood. So teaching kids good habits early will pay dividends in later life and hopefully teach them to save and understand the value of money as well.
I see that a fifth of parents say that their children top up their piggy banks by getting jobs or starting their own businesses. Any signs of your own children becoming little mini entrepreneurs, Will?
My daughter said to me yesterday, she wanted to get a job. Because she's realized now that I'm saying, well, if you want that, you have to buy it yourself. So she's realizing now that she needs to start making money and she wants things and she wants the nice things in life. And I've been saying to her, well, that only comes if you can go out and earn money yourself. And she's 15, so there's only sporadic things she can do, but there is weekend jobs. So she is looking at that. As far as entrepreneurs go, my son still plays games on his PlayStation till daft o'clock in the morning. He's 19. I'm on his back constantly. You know, life is round the corner and you're just not seeing it. But it's a really tough time because I don't want him to grow up too quick either because life can be terrifying once you step into that world. But at the same time, I don't want to protect them too much where they're not ready. So it's a fine line. My son is into creative media, so he's going to be behind the camera, hopefully starting a job very soon, and he'll be working in editing and camera work. So it's my field, but I'm in front of the camera, he's behind. And my daughter's an amazing artist, so hopefully she's going to go to art college and see where that takes her. I just hope the best for him. And more importantly, I just hope we wake up in this country and the government wakes up and just goes, there's something wrong here. We can't keep taking taking everything away from the poor and making the rich richer and the poor poorer. It's just not a way of living. We need to bring that closer together. I just hope they wake up.
It's like financial fair play, but for individuals. Let's move on to Mona. Mona, how can people actually access details about the survey and indeed how Metro Bank can actually provide some useful tips as well from what we've been talking about today?
You can go to the Metro Bank website and see details of the survey. But I think what's more important is that you do your own research, look online for tips on things like budgeting and saving. There are a lot of resources out there that can help parents to help their children budget and save. If you happen to live near a Metro Bank store, pop in and see if they can help to deliver a money zone, maybe to your child's class, or if your child is in the Brownies or the Guides or the Scouts, maybe talk to the Metro Bank store about that. I'm sure that we'd love to come out and deliver the money zone for you. And I think one of the best tips, though, is talk to your children about money. Money used to be, I think, a very taboo topic. I think a lot of our parents probably didn't talk to us about money. They didn't want to worry us when we were children. But nowadays, a lot more subjects are being talked about with children in a really open and honest way. And as Will said, you know, he's talked to his kids. He's told them, if you want something, go and get a job. So, yeah, get your kids to understand money doesn't grow on trees. You need to work hard for it. This is how much it's worth. This is what happens if you save. And if you're having, you know, with older children, I think if you are having struggles as a household, you can talk to your kids about it, because I think it's important as well that they understand things don't necessarily come easily. Again, going back to my first point, those early childhood lessons carry through into adult life and can be really valuable once you go out into the world by yourself.
Mona Patel, personal finance expert from Metro Bank, huge thanks. And obviously, Will Mellor, actor, singer, sadly, yes, Manchester United supporter. I mean, Will, you've got to change that allegiance, you know, seriously. But what the heck? There is only one side in Manchester, as we said before. But for now, Will Mellor, many thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on and happy saving.
Thank you. I'll keep supporting the biggest club in the world. Thank you. Bye-bye.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money, that's what I want, that's what I want, that's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money. Everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.